Hey guys, welcome to AIPT Comics Podcast, Episode 8, where we talk about the latest news, the comics we love, and the comics we're looking forward to next week. I'm David Brooke, your co-host, and also with me is Forrest Hollingsworth.
Hello, that's Forrest with two R's. Turn to page 25 to find out what happens to me.
And Connor Christensen.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm going through a bit of a rough time right now, guys. I recently severed ties with my local comic book shop and have started up with a new one. So it's been a rough transition. You know, it's very emotionally draining, but I'm here and I'm excited to feel happiness once again, feel joy and be excited about comics.
I'm sure Forrest and I are going to pour one out for you. This is a tough time for you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. All I'm going to say is that when somebody puts a book in their poll, don't sell that book to somebody else. And if you are going to sell it to somebody else, don't tell the person that you're selling it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe you'll retain customers.
Like being stabbed in the back, I'm sure. So that's the first bit of news this week. To start our show, we always talk about the latest news in the comic book industry, the stuff that's titillating everyone and getting them excited or angry. And to start with, we want to talk about some new Hulu shows that'll be animated Marvel shows that are all leading to a super team show called The Offenders. That sounds vaguely comedic, wouldn't you guys say?
Vaguely, yes.
Hopefully.
The shows that are leading to The Offenders are Howard the Duck, Hitmonkey, Dazzler and Tigress Show, so that sounds like it might be like a talk show type comedy, and MODOK, everyone's favorite giant floating head. And the coolest aspect, I think, of this news is the fact that they've got big-time comedians like Patton Oswalt and Chelsea Handler handling these shows, which sounds nice. Really cool in concept, but then again, these people haven't made shows like this before, so who knows what might happen. Are you guys excited for these, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Patton Oswalt, he is on Happy on Sci-Fi. He plays the voice of the unicorn Happy. And I think he is he's well experienced in balancing hyperviolence and absurd comedy, which I think is perfect for MODOK. Plus, I would think with an animated MODOK show, there's a decent chance we get Gwenpool in that series, since MODOK played a huge role in the Gwenpool series.
True.
The comic series. Who knows? Maybe we'll get our first little bit of adapted Gwenpool action. I'd be pretty stoked about that.
The Howard the Duck series is coming from Kevin Smith and Aqua Teen Hunger Force co-creator Dave Willis. So I'm pretty excited about that one. It seems like a good blend of someone that knows quite a bit about comics as a medium and someone that knows quite a bit about animation and comedy on TV. So I think that there's a good creative force behind that. The Tigra and Dazzler one gives me a little bit of pause, mostly because Chelsea and the other person behind it, Erica Renova, came out and said, yeah, we're really happy to be the people representing the girls' show. And I was kind of like, have they told you right from the get-go that this is the show that's supposed to be the girls' show? Or this is the show about girls or for girls from this lineup? Because that makes me a little worried that that's the only time that they're going to get any credence or something like that. You know, it seems a little bit like the old, the very bro-y Adult Swim stuff that they've kind of stepped away from now. But I'm a little worried about that.
Considering the creators behind these, it's probably going to be pretty adult.
Yeah,
no doubt.
I assume Howard the Duck is going to be basically like a mashup between Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back and Aqua Teen Hunger Force, which I would be fine with.
Yeah, absolutely.
I forgot that the Aqua Teen Hunger Force co-creator was attached to this. And Aqua Teen Hunger Force is so weird, but it is so goddamn funny. So I will trust anything that he makes.
You know, and a sort of a saving grace to all this to ease our minds is the fact that Jeff Loeb is going to be executive producer for The Offenders, which is bringing all the characters together. So there's got to be some sort of cohesion between the shows, or at least something that keeps them all sort of in a certain line. So there is a focus that it isn't like one's crazier than the other sort of thing.
Yeah, and I'd assume that it's going to be like very similar, if not the same animation style too. That way you don't have these like clashing visual aesthetics, which is a problem we've ranted about in comics a lot.
That could work, though, because look at Spider-Verse. They have they have different sort of styles, those characters.
Very good point.
Not that different. In your defense, they're not that different. They are just slightly different from each other. Mm-hmm. Although the Spider-Pig is, or Spider-Ham is a little, is probably the more aggressively different.
The one thing, though, is I haven't thought about Hitmonkey in years. Like, I had forgotten that Hitmonkey was a real character, and then when this got announced, I almost wanted to go back and read the Deadpool Daniel Way collection I have, where Hitmonkey is like one of the main antagonists, because it's such an absurd character, but so funny at the same time that it's the perfect character for an animated like Adult Swim type series.
What I'm curious is if they're going to be comics sprouting from this. Probably so, right?
Oh, no doubt. I think if they have any opportunity to capitalize on it, they will.
They'll make comics off of any of their properties. Like, there's even the Gamerverse is starting up now with Spider-Man City at War, which is just an adaptation of the Spider-Man video game.
I'd love to see some of these comedians writing these comics. I mean, Patton Oswalt's knowledge of comics is insane. You've probably both seen the Parks and Rec rant he goes on.
Yes.
That's on the internet, where he's just on. It's like he's making a super universe where Star Wars and Thanos and all this stuff.
Where he talks about Boba Fett crawling his way back out of the Sarlacc pit.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's an exciting time for TV show watchers, which we'll get to later in a Trending Now piece. In our second bit of news, though, foreshadowing, Donnie Cates has gone on Twitter and said that he'd totally be down to do a Marvel Ultimate Universe, which I think the Marvel Ultimate Universe has been retired, so to speak, because they've moved Miles over to the 616. I don't know if they're still calling it the 616.
In Spider-Geddon, at the very least, they identified the heroes from 616 as being from 616. Oh, okay.
I wasn't sure, because after Secret Wars, right, the event a couple years ago, they made this big stink about how like there is no longer multiple universes, and yet they almost instantly broke that rule. But anyway, if they were to make a new universe, a new Ultimate Universe, Donny Cates is down to write it or curate it. What do you guys think? Is that exciting news?
It is, but I'm a little hesitant after how excited I got for him curating Marvel Knights, the 20th anniversary of that. And it's not that it was bad. It was just, I don't know, kind of a letdown. It wasn't as exciting as I thought it was going to be. So if he was doing his own, like, if it was just full on his own universe, kind of like how the Ultimates was, where it's just like this runs in tandem with the ongoing Marvel Universe, it's just its own universe now. So if he was able to take the reins of a full-blown new universe and not just a miniseries, I think I'd be much more excited. But if you're going to limit him to a miniseries again, I don't know how I'd feel about it.
Yeah, it was sort of sold as something bigger than it really was.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty excited about the prospect of it, especially because I've seen a couple creators, mainly Tom Taylor, who I really love. He's one of my favorite comics writers right now, reach out and say, I would also really love to do this. And Donnie just started saying, let's do it. Let's plan it. Let's do it. I don't think that guy ever says no to anything. I also don't think he has the time to do half of the projects he's saying yes to, which makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, just a couple days ago, Kate said that he had no time for a couple, like Baby Teeth. Because he's writing the God show or movie,
God Country movie,
yes.
Optioned by Legendary,
exactly. Yeah.
And then Tom Taylor said, "Well, Donnie, we don't actually have time for this." And then Donnie said, "Well, let's bring it up at the next Marvel Writers Retreat." So it could be going somewhere. It could not be. I saw a lot of people in the replies to this kind of playing out on Twitter saying, "Yes, this is great." Miles kind of got lost in the shuffle of the mainline universe, essentially, and we want him to have his own stories again. We want it to all be focused on him and for it to have its own credence, basically. And I think people are really hot for Miles right now after Into the Spider-Verse, so I can see why people might be clamoring for that. But I've also seen a number of memes where they show the Green Goblin from Ultimate and say, you know, this is when we knew, not even the first year into the Ultimate Universe, that it was going downhill.
Yeah, the Ultimate Universe, like, simultaneously is looked upon fondly. A lot of people like to talk about how great it was and how it was this ambitious new project, but then there's a lot of stuff that gets made fun of about it. Isn't there, I've honestly never read any of the Ultimate Universe books, but isn't there, like, one where, like, Blob or the Glob eats, like, starts eating people? And it's like a big problem they have or something like that. I just remember seeing like a really weird panel that people pointed out, like, yeah, this is one of the times where the Ultimate Universe started to kind of sputter.
Mark Millar, I think, was writing the Ultimate X-Men for a while. And mm-hmm. There were some ideas that were interesting and some that didn't work. But that was kind of what was so cool about it, right? They were just writers could do whatever they wanted because there was no continuity or history behind the characters that they needed to be beholden to.
Yeah, and that's what I like about the idea of doing a separate universe is you can kind of you can have your cake and you can eat it too. You can start from scratch. You can completely reboot the universe without rebooting all the existing continuity you have, because you can still continue with the mainline universe, but you can also have that freedom. Like, okay, we're gonna try some new shit. Aunt May dies instead of Uncle Ben, and we're gonna see how that affects Peter. Stuff like
ultimately
that.
The concept is to bring in new readers, right? Like a younger audience that can enjoy the characters from scratch. And it worked for a while, but then, you know, over time the stories start to, you know, repeat themselves from the main universe because they worked so well. Did you read the Ultimate Universe at all, Forrest?
Only the Miles stories.
Okay.
Yeah, which I loved very much.
I mean, I really liked the Spider-Man that Bendis was writing, and I can't believe Mark Bagley, they together wrote like 150 issues straight, like together, just those two. Talk about an epic run.
Oh, that is, yeah. The thought of having a writer and an artist stay on a series for that long, I mean, yeah. it makes me tingle in my jingles, I'll tell you that much.
Bagley has to have some records for most consistent artists. I mean, he was doing bi-weekly too for a while there.
And he's hopping on something else too. I'm blanking on it, but like there was just a big announcement that he's doing. It's going to drive me nuts. But yeah, Mark Bagley's awesome. He did Deadpool Assassin too recently with Colin Bunn. That series was fucking sweet.
Yeah, he's been hopping around a lot. Moving on in news, we're going to actually move over to some DC news. And it's some sad news, but also has a happy ending as well. Second Coming, the DC Vertigo book, one of the, six books that they hyped back in the summer for the big relaunch for DC Vertigo, is canceled. Unfortunately, Mark Russell's Jesus Meets Superman story will no longer be with DC Vertigo. Instead, he went on Twitter and came out and said, no, don't worry, guys. We're going to bring this to another publisher. And he thanked DC Vertigo for all their help and that it's still their book. It's just that they don't want to publish it. And then on top of that news, Batman Damned number 3 is being delayed. And we all know what happened with Batman Damned number 1 and all the controversy there. So it makes you wonder, is DC very, very scared of controversy? Since Second Coming probably would piss off a lot of Christians. And Batman Damned number 3, who knows? Maybe there's more nudity that would have made the little kids cry. It's sort of sad to see this because, I mean,
I'm sorry, I got really derailed by the idea of a kid just like crying at the sight of a breast.
Right, or like, Batman's penis, yeah.
Yeah.
It was hard enough to look at Batman's penis in the first issue, but then in the third issue, his testicles are in there too.
Yes, and they are they hang low, it's true.
And that's so, not one of his accessories.
They're so bushy.
Anyway, I'm sad. I'm going to say right now, I got to talk to Mark Russell at San Diego Comic-Con about Second Coming, and I was so excited. He has written a book basically recapping the entire Bible, but in a comedic way. I highly recommend that book. I forget the name of it now. It's like leather-bound, and it's like nice, like biblical thin paper. It's really cool. So he knows what he's talking about when it comes to Christianity, and to get his take on like a comedic angle where Jesus is sent back to Earth to learn something from Superman because he's way more popular than Jesus ever was is a cool concept. And it doesn't even sound that controversial to me because it's so obviously comedy, and Mark Russell is known for his comedy in comics. So why not let him do it? But clearly, someone got their panties in a bunch and were like, no, we don't want this. What do you guys' take?
I think it's, I do think a little bit DC is more aware, for better or for worse, they're a little bit more aware of how things that they produce are going to be received. At least they have been more aware since Batman the Damned number 1, which I still think was a controversy that was way the fuck overblown. DC can be as afraid as of controversy if you want, but once you start tiptoeing as much as you possibly can around controversy, you're just going to stall all your work because all you're going to be concerned about is creating controversy and not just creating. So, I don't know. I wish DC kind of was okay with taking more chances. It's 2019. You're always going to offend somebody. Everyone's going to be offended by something. So you can't really worry about that. You just gotta keep going. And if people get offended on a massive scale, then you learn and continue.
I sure do wish they had said something about Eric Escobar.
Oh, yeah, you're right. They should have stopped that.
If you can pull out of a Jesus and Superman book and rewrite stuff because of Batman's dick, you can definitely say something about a serial sexual harasser and abuser. Or Scott Lobdell, or anyone else that they've had, and not necessarily protected, although Scott is still writing for them, Eric's not. But they cancel books and they don't say why, although everyone else around the book knows why.
Right, like when they canceled Second Coming, they didn't necessarily say why. And Mark Russell had to come out on his personal Twitter and sort of iron things out. Like, that's kind of a PR nightmare right there.
Yeah, and there was a ton of people saying that, I cannot believe that DC has done this. Everyone seemed to know. I'm not really sure where the news came from, but everyone seemed to know that DC had canceled it because they had received a bunch of hateful letters. Some sort of, like, targeted letter campaign that said, we'll stop buying DC Comics if you publish this book.
Right, right. I think it came out from Newsarama. I think they broke that news, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And I don't know. Sure. I don't know if it was because the solicitations. I mean, it's usually because comic stores get the news that stop trying to sell this book. It's no longer coming, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I don't know.
It's not first coming.
These scores and scores and scores of fundamentalist Christian comic book readers have a very strong willpower, and they bring a lot of market value to the table. So you don't want to upset that crowd.
The saddest thing for me is both the Black Label and then DC Vertigo, they're supposed to be for adults. They're supposed to be taking chances. And if you're worried about a book offending someone before it even comes out, you're going to just make creators go, why am I even working for this publisher anymore? I can go to Image or Dark Horse or whatever and tell my story.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, Mark Russell is literally going to be doing because, I mean, I am thankful though that DC Vertigo is letting him take the book elsewhere, because no doubt he signed some contract that said you couldn't do that. So they, at least they've done that.
Yeah, I think with DC Vertigo, they're not creator owned titles. Like, it might be your idea, but once you publish the book with DC Vertigo, it's theirs. That's why DC can't really have that separation between creators and what they publish that Image does. Like, Image can easily separate themselves from anything that is deemed, you know, controversial or inappropriate in their books, because they look like, this is the writer's opinions, not ours. We're just publishing it. Which I think is why you get so many more creators would rather go with an Image, or they'd rather go with Aftershock or Black Mass, because they have complete and utter freedom to do what they want to do.
In our last bit of news today, Marvel Comics came out and revealed a new Avengers book. Wow, I just can't. You know, I'm so excited when there's always another Avengers book around the corner. Secret Avengers, New Avengers, Uncanny Avengers, and now
all new Avengers.
Adjective Avengers.
Savage Avengers. Ooh, what makes them savage, guys?
Conan.
Guns and swords.
Venom.
Yeah.
Just shout out character names. Punisher.
It's so...
Brother
it's
Voodoo. So,
I saw Wolverine. Somebody on Twitter talking about it. Like, wasn't the whole point of No Surrender to consolidate all the Avengers books? And now, just as they're launching No Road Home, there's now three Avengers books again. Where they're circling back and being like, alright, well, let's expand the Avengers line again.
Yeah, so basically this one says, spinning out of Avengers No Road Home, Savage Avengers will feature Conan fighting alongside a, quote, unsanctioned team of heroes in the Marvel Universe, including Wolverine, Venom, Punisher, Elektra, and Brother Voodoo. So it's weird that they're saying it's a spin out of Avengers. It is Savage Avengers, but also it's an unsanctioned team. It's almost like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too with regards to that, Connor.
Yeah, they're tossing the Avengers brand on it, but also at the same time going, but they're not really an Avengers team. Then fucking call them something different.
What I'm excited about is there's going to be no tables unless someone's getting thrown through them, because that's a big factor in the books I read.
I don't even...
Yeah, the marketing around it is really weird. There's a quote that says literally that, if folks don't know.
And this is most likely a stupid question, but consider the source. What do they mean by that? Like, I don't even
know. I have no idea.
I don't even know what that means.
Tom Brevoort said, the only scenes in Savage Avengers that involve a table is when somebody's being thrown through one. I think what he's trying to say is it's not going to be like a two-shot of two characters talking, or a interrogation scene where characters are talking. It's going to be nonstop action. Nothing slows down kind of thing. I don't know why a table has to be part of that, but...
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's just a very weird way of phrasing it. It's unique, though.
Yeah, it's unique. We're talking about it. It stood out to me.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about it, so I guess it worked.
But it immediately took me to a scene where he's just flipping through comics and getting mad at all the tables.
Yeah.
Like,
there's other things that can support your things. And why are there so many tables?
Shelves!
Do you guys know, is Brother Voodoo a killer? Because he's the only character on this team that I'm not sure if he's a murderer like the rest.
I know little to nothing about Brother Voodoo.
Me too.
I always thought he was, because he was on the... He was on an Avengers team last year or a year before that, where Rogue was the leader. I forget the name of the book.
That was Uncanny, wasn't it?
Yeah. And from what I remember, he's kind of like Doctor Strange in that he has a code of, you know, he's not murdering people left and right like the rest of these guys on the team.
I think that sounds about right.
The biggest part of this team that interests me is Conan, because he doesn't have superpowers. So I'm wondering if they're going to give him a superpower or like pump up his powers to be on the team. Although Punisher doesn't either, but...
Yeah, I was going to say Punisher doesn't. It sucks because, like, I do have a lot of faith in the creative team. I mean, it's Jerry Duggan and Mike Deodato. They work together a lot, and when they do work together, it's normally pretty awesome. I'm not comfortable with the Punisher being an Avenger. That's just... That seems... Like you had... It was a storyline in the ongoing Punisher series, like, not... Like, maybe 5 months ago, that the Avengers were... chasing after Frank Castle because he was a wanted international criminal who had spurred a coup d'etat in a foreign country. So, like, it just doesn't make, like, I just don't like branding, like, I don't like the idea that, like, oh, Frank Castle's an Avenger now. Like, wait, what? Like, I know he has been in the past, but I've always thought that was dumb and doesn't make sense for the entirety of the world.
Yeah, but this is an unsanctioned team, so they're not necessarily real Avengers.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then... One more thing, and this is minor. I'm sick of hearing about Wolverine being in other books when I still don't know how the fuck he got back.
Yeah.
It's growing really
I did
tiresome.
Like the little thing at the end of Uncanny 11 where Kid Cable said, "Where have you been?" And Wolverine said, "I got caught up in some stupid shit."
Yeah. I laughed at that because I was like, I wonder if that's a shot at like the fact that it still makes zero sense how he's back.
That's one of my biggest pet peeves with comics in general is... drawing the story out way longer than it needs to be.
Well, there won't be any tables in this, so don't worry.
All right, guys, we're going to move on. In our next segment, we're going to be talking about the top books from last week, our favorite top two books each. And to accompany our picks is Comic Book Roundup's highest scoring comics of last week. And we're going to start with number two. The number two highest scoring book with a 9.6 is Savage Sword of Conan number one by Jerry Duggan and Ron Garney. This is the second Marvel Comics Conan series, and I'm not going to say anything else because I liked it, and I think someone else did and might be on their lists. Forrest, what's your second pick?
My second pick is Savage Sword of Conan number one, written by Jerry Duggan with art by Ron Garney.
I didn't see that coming.
I liked it quite a bit. A little bit of history for you guys. Savage Sword of Conan was originally a magazine instead of a comic when it came out in the 1960s, 1970s. And the reason that it is so popular and the reason that Marvel has continued it is because it was originally published as a magazine. It was not subject to the Comics Code authority. So artists and writers could do whatever they wanted in it.
Ultra-violence.
Yeah, ultra-violence, ultra-sex, ultra... like cults and all sorts of monsters and stuff that was kind of being scrutinized at the time, they could get away with in a magazine. I don't know why, but they could as compared to comics. And so that's kind of where the Savage Sword title comes from. And it allowed one Conan series to continue safe under the comics umbrella while a whole other like paradigm for the character was being explored in Savage Sword of Conan. And that's absolutely true here. We have the story going on from Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Asrar in the normal Conan or mainline Conan story. And then we have this Savage Sword of Conan spinoff from... Gary Duggan and Ron Garney, and it is similar in effect. It still has Conan. He's still fighting a bunch of pirates who look like skeletons. He's got a sword. He's super violent and masculine and aggressive, but it's already kind of different from what's going on in that other story. He's got magic treasure map where he's kind of tracking down a great treasure, a cult maybe. He's having visions, which is not something that would normally be happening in a Conan story. And already he's got kind of a sidekick, definitely not something that would normally happen. And so they're exploring the character through kind of a parallel universe or like a broken mirror, multiple visions of the same character, but it's not necessarily intersecting with or destroying that other storyline at all because they're so separate from each other. And so it works really well in that way. And I like it quite a bit. I like that it ties back to the history of that book. And I like that they get to show off all the multiple facets of this very expansive, very rich world and character in that way.
It's a dope book. I reviewed it for aptcomics.com and gave it a pretty high score.
9.6 worthy.
I'm going to talk about my second pick, which is Wonder Twins number one by Mark Russell and Stephen Byrne. I actually didn't get to read it till this morning. I really liked it. Obviously, Mark Russell he's becoming one of my favorite writers because he's the guy who did Flintstones for so long, and he was even surprised at what they allowed him to do with that property. He is really good at poking fun at society and making commentary that is not only interesting, but funny. He can spin something in such a way that you respect the thing he's talking about, but also can laugh at it. And Wonder Twins number one pokes fun at comic books in general, or the stories within. The two characters are in high school. They're obviously twins. They have powers that are a bit ridiculous, which even Wonder Woman in the comic is like, what? That's a dumb power. And as the story unfolds, you kind of learn they're actually pretty good at what they do, and they can actually solve problems that the entire Justice League can't figure out. And there's a lot of funny little pokes at being a teenager, getting your puberty, for instance. And I don't know, it's very light and fun, and I recommend the book. It's worth a read. What's your second pick, Connor?
So I went with The Magic Order number 6 from Mark Millar and Oliver Coypel. It was the final issue in season 1 of The Magic Order, and it was pretty goddamn fantastic. It's very action-heavy, and what I kind of like about this is it's a story about wizards and witches, but it's very much for adults, and it's graphically violent. So imagine if it was like, you know, Harry Potter was dueling some other dark wizard, but when the spell from his wand hit the wizard fucking exploded. Like in a shower of blood. That's kind of what happens in this issue. It gets very, very hyper violent. It's a little startling, but it kind of like raises the stakes for everything. And then there's also this very, very heartbreaking moment that is a big spoiler, so I won't go into it too much. But there, it just has this one moment that really like captures the feeling of loss and grief and sacrifice and like what parents will do for their kids. And it brought a little tear to my eyes. So it's just a fantastic ending to a great series, and it leaves the door open perfectly for a season 2, which Mark Millar has already confirmed is happening. So great book, great series. I suggest everyone check it out. Either pick up the first 6 issues or pick up the trade, which I believe comes out in like a month and a half.
Perfect timing. Moving on to the number one pick of the week, according to Comic Book Roundup, is Frendo number 4 with a 9.6. This is a Vault Comics book. Our very own Ritesh Babu reviewed it for aptcomics.com. I don't know much about this series, to be honest, but it looks intriguing.
Vault is on top of their game right
now.
They
really are.
That's what I know.
Yeah.
Wasted Space, Frendo, The Savage Swords, a bunch of other books.
Mm-hmm.
They're rocking it. I'm the only person I know that says Frendo is the bad guy in No Country for Old Men, but I'm interested to check it out.
Yeah, I've been reading. I haven't read Frendo, but I know Vault Comics tweets about it a lot. I see a lot of other comic writers whenever they get asked, like, what's an underrated book right now? A lot of them toss out Frendo or they talk about These Savage Swords. I have read Wasted Space, the first 3 issues of Wasted Space, and it's awesome. And if Frendo is anything like Wasted Space, I'm sure it's fantastic because it seems like Vault is focusing on science fiction stories, which I'm a sucker for. So Frendo is definitely one of those issues that are one of those series that I'm hoping to pick it up and trade at some point and give it a shot.
Forrest, what's your number one pick?
My number one pick is Age of X-Men : Next Gen number 1, written by Ed Brisson with art by Marcus Toe. These Age of X-Men folks have me wrapped around their finger. This issue is focused primarily on the younger X-Men that were a part of Uncanny X-Men Disassembled. So we're talking Glob Herman, we're talking Armor, we're talking Pixie, we're talking Rockslide, we're talking Null, we're talking a couple other people whose names I can't remember right now. But there's a lot going on here, and I like the angle they're taking, leaning really hard into this mystery of this utopia that definitely has a seedy underbelly, which I said about Marvelous X-Men as well, but the cracks here are so much more apparent than they were in Marvelous X-Men. And I like seeing that this world is expansive and that outside of the approach or the immediacy of Nate Gray, everyone else is also kind of aware of what's happening and forwarding their own agendas in trying to unravel what's happening and potentially undo his actions. It's implied that Glob either very fully remembers what happened in Uncanny X-Men or kind of remembers it as a dream or something. He's basically written a notebook of everything that happened in Uncanny X-Men, the first 10 issues Disassembled, and all the other kids are making fun of him for writing fan fiction. And I liked that a whole bunch because it got back to the initial core conceit of Glob where everyone's making fun of him and poking fun at him. But in this instance, he's totally right. And so he doesn't really get upset. He doesn't cry about it or anything like that. He just kind of is like, you'll see. You'll all see. And it's scary and it's dark and it's weird and it's uncanny. Nice. Kind of like Brave New World or 1984. Thank you. And I like it very much in that they've given a lot of consideration to making this perfect world feel slightly out of step or feel off. I think the initial idea of the things that the students are doing, learning about agriculture or security or history or any of these other paths through their school, that's really cool. That's a kind of utopia I would like to live in. But they do a great job of exposing the inherent flaws in that system as well. And I like that quite a bit. Ed's writing and Marcus Toe's art do a great job of paying each other off. And there's an awesome, awesome cliffhanger that I won't spoil here. It's kind of revealed on the second issue's cover, but I'm really excited for where they're going. I think this one is going to be the one that reaches a fever pitch probably before the other miniseries do, and I just can't wait to see it play out.
Yeah, I actually reviewed this one too, and the Age of X-Men's sort of the whole event, it just feels like it's a great time to start stories from scratch in a sense. We're all kind of at a disadvantage of not knowing what's going on, and that makes it more exciting. Wouldn't you say, boys?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Not when you phrase it like that.
I'm going to be talking about this for the rest of the show. And my number one pick, Marvel's Annotated Number One by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross. This is a comic that's actually 25 years old, but it's annotated now with notes and cool sketches that Ross drew at the time. And these notes are fantastic. It's 9 pages of very small font notes going through this book actually collects issue number 0 and number 1. And it goes through practically panel by panel, revealing little Easter eggs throughout, which is really cool if you liked Marvels, but also if you like comic book history, because these guys went deep with the cuts. Not only, you know, sticking like Clark Kent and Lois Lane into the background scenes in a Marvel comic, oh my God, but also referencing old school, like 1940s comics with comic covers of the time in the art itself. Obviously, Marvel's was a huge event in comic book history, I would say, because it showed you a different way of telling the same stories we knew, like Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, but from the ground level, from people on the streets and how they would have reacted if they saw a four skyscraper tall Galactus walking down Main Street. And to get the sort of some backstory on what made them make the comic and what inspired them when it comes to just a simple panel of art is really cool. And it gives you a new perspective on the work. And even though it's not a brand new comic, I highly recommend it. It's a great read.
So it's basically like a director's cut.
Yeah, pretty much. Cool. Yeah. I think when they finish, it's a 4-issue series. When they finish, it's probably going to be put into an amazing hardcover, I would imagine. And that'll be That'll be really cool to read. Connor, what's your number one pick?
Well, my number one pick, sticking with the theme of non-Big Two books, I chose Oblivion Song number 12 by Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo De Felici. This series, man, I remember when I reviewed the first book last year in January, it was the first 10 out of 10 I gave because it is so good. Kirkman and De Felici work together so incredibly well. I think Kirkman is very aware of how much a visually driven book this is. So he really lets the art do a lot of the talking. There's only dialogue when there needs to be dialogue, and I really appreciate that. But this issue specifically, it's very climactic. It's obviously finishing up the first year of the story, and it hasn't really been two story arcs. You know, like a lot of story arcs are broken up by either like five or six issues. This has really been one grand story arc that's been told over these first 12 issues, while simultaneously planting the seeds for what's going to be happening in year two of this series. There's tremendous payoff here. There's some really heartfelt and emotional moments between the main character and his brother. It's just absolutely fantastic, and there's so many splash pages that are so goddamn pretty that you just you kind of pause in the story and just stare at the page because there's so much detail, and there's these like beautiful little creatures running around, and it's fantastic. Skybound really hit it out of the park with this book. Kirkman is, you know, on top of his game. He is one of the best right now, and this book proves it. It is fantastic. Issue number 13, I don't even think they're taking a break. I'm pretty sure issue number 13 comes out next month, so it's awesome. Whenever you get a chance, I definitely recommend picking up the trade if you haven't read the first 12 issues. It's such a good story.
I want to know when the Oblivion Song TV show is coming, because you know Kirkman's working on that.
Oh, he has.
Oh, no doubt.
He has to be, yeah. And it's something that would definitely lend itself to TV pretty easily. I think it works perfectly as a comic, too, just because of how beautiful it is. And it would probably, the only thing is, it would cost so much money to make as a TV show, because you would have to, there would have to be a lot of CGI to get the monsters in there and to make Philadelphia look like it's in a different dimension or a different planet. They still haven't really revealed what Oblivion is, which I like. I think it's pretty cool. It's just, oh, it's such a cool series. And they just do a really good job of telling the main story while also weaving in little subplots that are eventually going to be a big deal. They do that without taking away from the main story or making the main story feel like an afterthought. It's awesome. It's just such a good series.
Nice. So guys, that's our top six picks from last week, our favorite comics. Go check them out. Let us know what you think in the comments on aptcomics.com, on the website, on our article for this podcast. Anywho, moving on, next segment, it's called Square Up. We've done it once before for hilarious results. Scarecrow versus Quicksilver. Cats were smashed against the wall. It was brutal. Okay, this is a segment where we take a hero or villain from the big two, Marvel and DC, and have them fight against each other, but in a selected scenario. This isn't just punching each other in the face. It's something else. And so I'm going to randomly generate a DC character, which is Doomsday. And then I'm going to randomly generate a Marvel character, which is Luke Cage. And Forrest is going to tell us how they fight.
Yes, I'm going to pick a scenario from the Yellow deck for Super Fight. Not a sponsor, but hey, if you're looking. So we're going to pull one here. we're not going to do that one because that's way too political, and I'm going to take that out of the deck. It was Make Mexico Pay for the Wall, in case anyone's wondering.
Interesting.
We are going to do Beach Volleyball.
Wow, Beach Volleyball. So we've got two characters that are almost indestructible.
Yeah, yep. Let's say it's not one-on-one, it's 2v2. Do they get to pick? They get to pick whoever their partner would be, logically. So, like, for Luke Cage, that would be Iron Fist or Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And I don't even know who that would be for Doomsday Clock. Or Doomsday.
It's a clock.
It's just a big clock. So I think for that reason alone, Luke Cage would have a better supporting cast. He would have, even if it was one-on-one, he would have a crowd supporting him. He has a lot of friends. He has the Heroes for Hires. He has the Avengers. Mm-hmm. He has the Defenders. He's been on a lot of teams. The guy's a networking fiend. Okay, he's got a lot of business cards. He hands them out. People know who he is. People call him. People like him. They want to come support him. They want to see him win. So he'd have a big – he'd have a fan section. And, you know, even if he's a shit volleyball player, just the amount of love and support he would get alone would be enough to propel him to an easy victory over Doomsday. I don't even know what the fuck Doomsday's powers are. I just know he's a bad guy in the DC universe. I mean, come on.
Oh, come on. Give your fucking balls a tug. All right. Obviously, I'm against you on this because Doomsday, if you know anything about volleyball, you need power and you need reach. And he's much taller and bigger than Luke Cage. So there's no way Luke can spike the ball on Doomsday. He's so huge, he's always going to get to the ball. And not only that, he's going to slam it so hard, it'll probably burst a hole right through Luke Cage's head.
I mean, here's the problem. Here's the problem, though. Anytime the ball touches Doomsday, it's going to fucking explode. Exactly. He's covered in spikes.
Exactly. So all Luke Cage has to do is make decent contact and just hit it towards Doomsday. And it's going to get a point. I could see an easy shutout victory.
Is there a rule in volleyball? I may have to Google this real quick. Is there a rule in volleyball for what happens if the ball just explodes into ribbons?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's part of his body. It's not like he's wearing, like, spikes. Those are his body. So.
It's his body, yeah.
Maybe he should have thought of that then before he decided to play volleyball. That's not on Luke.
It's true.
I am Googling volleyball destruction.
I don't know. If Doomsday could keep the ball on his hands, or palms, say, I think he could have an advantage, not only because he could spike it so hard and at such an angle that Luke couldn't get to it, but also because he's so his reach is so long that even if Luke got it over, there's no way Doomsday misses it.
But you got to think about the finesse and the power that Luke has as well.
I don't know. He's kind of bulky and like brutish. He's not very agile, right?
But he's an athlete though.
Doomsday is definitely not agile.
Exactly. So I think it's a lot of it is about ball placement, you know. Which we all know how important ball placement is, let me tell you.
In manga, there's a lot of volleyball stories. I think that Marvel needs to create sort of superhero sport comics. I would read those.
Yeah, like a Dead or Alive Volleyball Marvel edition.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. This is tricky. This is a tricky one. Because I think you do also have a point, though, with how large Doomsday is, that he'd be able to... get in the way of damn near everything.
I do think, though, that's a good point for us. He's so spiky that the ball would always get stopped on his side of the net.
And I would like to, and also, who would be there to support him? He would have nobody to bring him gushers when he got hungry, no orange slices in between sets to make sure he has enough vitamin C.
Oh, it's all about the fucking orange slices, too.
Yeah, he would have no Capri Sun, no Gatorade. He would never be hydrated. We all know hydration is key to anything.
Isn't Gushers
Dave, fruit Gushers, the quintessential volleyball snack? Yeah. What's wrong with you?
Is it really? I didn't know
Dave,
that.
Dave, do you even know who Misty May Trainor is? I mean, come on.
I don't, actually. Who is that?
Oh, my God. She's a volleyball
Olympic
legend.
Olympic-level volleyball legend.
I thought fruit Gushers
Misty
were like
May,
those like
Misty
sugar...
Misty May Trainor and Kerry Walsh? You don't know that duo?
No.
Only the greatest duo in beach
Holy
volleyball
shit,
history.
Dude. Yeah, no, actually. Whoa.
I don't actually know anything about volleyball besides how to play it.
Oh, yeah, man. I was big on beach volleyball in the Olympics as a kid. It's an exciting sport.
There's a lot of butt shots.
Really impressive. Yeah, they're great. my Google search for what happens if the volleyball is destroyed did not return any results. However, it did bring up a lot of results that says basically that volleyball players are small-level terrorists.
What?
And they destroy a lot of egg nests and sand dunes for indigenous species.
Holy
frequently,
shit.
So, and it's a huge problem.
I think we've determined the real enemy is volleyball itself and not the Doomsday or Luke Cage.
So I think we actually need a classic team-up series in which... It's you know, it's the classic versus series, Doomsday versus Luke Cage, and it starts off as them playing volleyball.
Oh yes, they're fighting each other.
And they're getting heated, and they're getting sweaty, yes. And it's like that scene from Top Gun. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, I think we need to join forces because the real enemy here is the game itself. Don't hate the player, hate the fucking game.
We got to protect those piping clovers.
Oh yeah.
I grew up on Cape Cod where the whole beach would shut down because the piping plovers decided to nest like right in the middle of where everyone goes.
Exactly. So I don't know, we call this one a draw.
They both win. Volleyball is the real enemy.
Yeah. There you go. I like it.
The real winner is Luke Cage because he has friends.
You know, but
which includes Doomsday when volleyball is
when
the
it's
real
all
enemy.
Said and done, yes, Doomsday and Luke Cage will be friends. Classic versus series.
All right, guys, I think we nailed that one in the bud. In our next segment, top book for next week, we pick the one book that's really getting us hot and bothered and excited for reading comics on Wednesday. What's next Wednesday? The 20th?
Sure is.
Yeah, that's going to be a good day. It's going to be a good day. Forrest, why is it going to be a good day for you?
My pick is Hulkverines, written by Greg Pak, with art by Ario Anindito. I really just picked this one because it highlights how crazy and fun comics can be. This is a comic about Hulk and Hulk and Wolverine hunting down Weapon H, the beast man, horrible abomination creature made from a mashup of their DNA. I think it's only going to be a 3-part series, but I just love the concept that's like, okay, so world-famous character Wolverine and world-famous character Hulk now need to team up with each other. They're both irrational and crazy and hyper-violent. They need to work together to track down a character that is a long-standing weapon made from their DNA combined. It has claws, it's giant, gray, and indestructible. It has little rock pebbles on its back, and hopefully it'll all turn out okay. Comics are great.
They sure are.
I also love that the subtitle on the actual cover says, come on, you know you'll love it. Like, this is absurd.
I love when they lean into that stuff, so I'm all about it.
Well, and the funny thing is, too, like, I don't know if you guys have been reading Weapon H. Weapon H has actually been awesome.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's
he's
fun.
A great addition. Like, it could have easily just been like a throwaway character where they don't develop him at all and he's just a Wolverine and Hulk crossover. But they've actually given, like, they fleshed out his backstory and made him a super interesting character. So I love it. I actually almost put this on my list too, but then I saw Forrest had it because it's going to be sweet.
You know, my pick for next week is in a similar vein in that Sharky the Bounty Hunter, number one, by Mark Millar and Simone Bianchi, is going to be insane. It's the crazy new, its own universe, sci-fi universe, where a blue-collar bounty hunter tracks criminals across the galaxy in a converted rocket-powered ice cream truck. It's just ridiculous. And it's one of those ideas that probably wouldn't fly at Marvel or DC simply because it wouldn't really work. It wouldn't really sit in the universe with the other characters roaming about. And I'm just excited because obviously this is another one of those Netflix Image Comics duos where they work together. This is probably going to be a cartoon or something in a couple years, and it's going to be fun to read such a ridiculous sci-fi series from the start.
Yeah, and when Mark Millar decides he's going to get weird, things get weird.
No kidding.
So sometimes a little too weird, sometimes a little over the top with the weirdness. But the Millar World books from Image and Netflix have been pretty goddamn good so far, because you have the Magic Order and you have Prodigy, and those have both been fantastic. So this is another one. You guys literally hit the two books I was going to put on my list. Well, actually, I had four that I was going to put on, but those were two of the four right there, because these both are making me excited. It's a good week for comics next week.
It is a good week.
It was hard to pick for me. There's a lot of really good stuff.
It was for me, too, because Turok number 2 also comes out next week, and I just fucking love Turok.
Yeah. Yep. You know, what's funny is when I was looking at the books coming out next week, it's actually a shorter list than usual, too. It's usually twice as long from all the publishers.
Yeah, it's quality versus quantity this week.
It is. What's your pick, Connor?
Well, I know what you guys are probably thinking. There's a book coming out next week. I've talked about it literally every episode except for last week, and I'm upset with myself that I didn't talk about it. But I'm not going to pick the Wildstorm, because we already know that I'm excited about it. We already know that I can rant about it. Instead, I'm going to talk about Nightwing number 57, written by Scott Lobdell, who, if you've ever read any of my Red Hood and the Outlaw reviews...
If you go to amputeecomics.com every Monday, we actually have a column called Judging by the Cover, where two of our staff pick their favorite comic covers. We do it here, too, on Sundays, here on the podcast. And we want to just, you know, give a little credence to the fact that there are some amazing comic book artists who can smash hit... home run a cover. And I'm going to start with mine. My favorite cover for next week is Catwoman number 8 by Joelle Jones, who, you know, she's just so good. Everyone already knows her name, so I don't even have to say anything about her. But the cover is sick. It's got Catwoman in her... She's got basically the leather outfit that she had in Batman Returns. Super nice, like, shiny sheen to it. And behind her is a outline of a cat sort of jumping down. And in that outline are all these characters that are in the book. Then behind that is this red cityscape. But I see, like, palm trees. I don't think she's in Gotham, folks. it just drew me in, not only with the figure of Catwoman and her shiny leather costume, but also this cat and then also the background. It's like a nice mix of all these things that are sort of drawing your eye across the page. That's my pick. What's your pick, Forrest?
My pick is Batman number 65, a variant cover by Guillaume March. Yo, for someone that is not reading the Batman series right now, I sure do love these variant covers. This one is really cool. It's got a really almost monochromatic color palette going on. It's only white, red, and black. It's got Superman down in the very center middle. He's very small. He's teeny tiny. He looks like he was shrunk. Honey, I Shrunk the Superman. I'm selling ideas, by the way, DC. And he's very small, but there's this huge ink sketch Batman looking down on him. The bat signal is kind of in his chest, and he's staring down at him. I love that it looks a little bit sloppy. Like, the bat ears are uneven. The left one is higher up than the right one. The eyes are sketchy. There's a bit of all these like sloppy buildings making up the skyline, and spotlights scratching out going across Batman's body. And there's just a lot here that I really, really like. It's very considered, but almost so considered that March clearly was like, you know what, I'm going to hold back a little bit on this. I'm not going to refine it too much. Like, they were working really hard on it and then said, I'm done. This is it, even though they could have kept going further. And I like that in an artist quite a bit, knowing when to stop. And this cover does that very well.
All right, guys, we have one more segment to go. Have you made it this far? I hope so, because we're going to be talking about something that's trending right now in the comics verse, where it's moving on into the TV verse. Yes, that's a thing. We have a lot of teen superheroes, or young superheroes, maybe not teenagers, getting their own TV shows. This week, we've got Umbrella Academy and Doom Patrol that just came out, Netflix and the DC Universe Network. So everyone's got one episode of Doom Patrol to watch, and then everyone has 10 episodes of Umbrella Academy from Netflix to watch. And then you've got Deadly Class coming out on Sci-Fi, which is probably, what, 4 or 5 episodes in now? And then on top of all that, if you haven't gotten your teen superhero fix on, you've got Runaways, Cloak and Dagger, Titans, Teen Titans Go, The Gifted, Legends of Tomorrow from the CW, all those shows. You've got probably 100 hours upon hours of this kind of stuff to watch, which is great for the comic industry in that it's obviously getting more eyeballs interested in superheroes. Now, obviously, we all know that sales when it comes to movies and TV doesn't necessarily equate to sales in comics, but it's becoming more and more, I don't know if the word cool is the right word, but accepted to like superheroes, I think, because of these shows. And it makes you wonder how many more can come, because we're running out of teen superheroes to adapt into TV.
I wonder if they'll just start de-aging older teams now. Like
the Avengers?
Yeah, like we're going to get a team up that is, maybe, oh, I got it. We'll do a team up where it's Captain America before he became Captain America, Bucky Barnes before he became the Winter Soldier, and Tony Stark's dad.
And in a live action show,
they'll call it Old Youngins, you know, because like they're old characters who are now young. Old Youngins.
I could see that happening.
Disney Plus, give me a call. I've got ideas.
I mean, just a couple days ago, I don't know if it was a leak or not, but the Loki show, new information came out about how that show will be about Loki influencing human history.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
And it's going to be a voiceover. It's going to be Tom Hiddleston voicing over young Loki's life.
Right. So, again, we've got another young... What is the deal with all these TV channels trying to capture that young audience? Is that the primo audience?
Yo, man, because fuck old people, that's why.
The olds, as you would say.
The olds. I didn't mean that, by the way. I love old people, sort of.
He does.
Some old people.
1% of old people.
Yeah.
The 1%ers. There are 3 teams that haven't necessarily been converted to live action. Gen 13 comes to mind. Young Avengers comes to mind. Although there is some rumors that they're working on something in the Young Avengers series into a live action, or maybe even a cartoon. And then there's Teen Titans, too. We haven't gotten that yet. We've only gotten Titans.
Yeah. Although Titans is like a weird mixture because, like, Dick Grayson and Starfire in Titans are both like in their mid to late 20s. But then Raven and Beast Boy are 14 at their oldest. So it's this kind of weird age difference between them all. And Jason Todd is in Titans, and he's like same thing. He's like 15. And I really hated the way they presented him, but that's a conversation for a different time. So yeah, like so even with even though we haven't gotten a true Teen Titans live action show, Titans is kind of like this middle ground between what is now known as the Titans in the DC universe and the Teen Titans.
Do you guys think this is a good trend?
Oh, Young Justice.
Oh yeah, the cartoon.
Yeah. And they could always make a live adaptation of that. I'm sure they have considered it and talked about it.
But yeah, I don't know. There's not much left.
The fact that we have all these shows shows you that there's so much untapped potential, I guess. You can have this many shows sort of about the similar themes. I'm sure like almost every show has a character trying to figure out their identity or whatever. I mean, I guess it's primed for a teenage drama or melodrama, I should say.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, a lot of superhero stories are, I mean, they're soap opera-ish, you know? They're kind of overdramatic and stuff like that. So I think it applies well to that type of storytelling. And like that's why the CW shows still work so well, is because you watch them and you realize, like, wow, this is like a soap opera, but with superheroes thrown in, like the overdramatic music and these long, drawn-out romantic like sequences and stuff like that. Like, so I think that lends itself to these teenage shows too. Is the fact that these are kind of they're glorified soap operas,
right?
And I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, not at all. I love them very much for that very specific reason, and I think a lot of people stick to them because the same as a soap opera, they're a revolving door. Characters are familiar, they might revisit plots and all that stuff, but hey, it's comfortable, it feels like home.
And there really hasn't been that many failures as well. Like, there's Generation X, I think, was one that never really got kicked off by Fox. Inhumans, another Fox show that didn't do so well.
Oh, no, that was worse. That was ABC.
Oh, that was ABC?
That was a Disney production, and oh my god, it was bad. It was unwatchably bad. Especially because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. already did a much better Inhuman storyline, that when they tried to do it on ABC, and that's when they released it in IMAX, too. The first two episodes you could see in IMAX in the movie theaters, and they lost so much money because they only made like $800,000 from IMAX movie ticket sales, but they spent millions on marketing. So that show was the first true flop for Disney Marvel stuff.
I think it's a cool trend, but I think it's going to wear itself out quick.
Well, I mean, how long until all the old man stories and old woman stories start becoming TV shows and movies? Because they already did Logan, and Logan was a huge success. So when are we going to get the old man Hawkeye movie? When is old lady Harley Quinn coming? Like, are they going to flip it? Are we going to get away from the teenagers and go to the olds?
The olds!
The olds never go away.
I think we're all going to wait for the actors who are playing Harley and Star-Lord to get actually old. And in their 70s, we're going to see these stories. What do you guys think?
And in the meantime, we got that Smallville reboot.
What? They're rebooting Smallville?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Hollywood is not running out of ideas, guys. It's all a myth. So, anywho, that's our show. I hope you liked it and liked listening to us yammer on about our favorite books and also the news and our opinions on it. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate it, review it. Tell your friends, tell your uncles, tell your olds, and thanks for listening.
Bye, Yukio.
See ya.